Welcome, Bix Weir.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Fiat money will die on its own. An unsustainable type of experiment that's been sustained through computers and derivative breaking for a long time. The cryptos are something completely different. They aren't out to kill the old system. The old system can't be killed. It can only kill itself. The cryptos are out there to create a new system running parallel to the old system so that if you choose, you have free will. If you choose to join a different system, if you get tired of that old system, oh, by the way, we have created a new system that you don't have to choose to go down with the ship. You can come over to the crypto world, and it is much more sound, much more safe. As far as the SEC and what they classify cryptos as, they're trying to put it in a single box, which you can't. Some are commodities, some are securities, some are tokens, some are currencies. And if it is a currency, this is what the regulators don't like. If it is a currency, those are untaxable transactions. So the SEC and the CFTC and the government have not made any laws about this stuff, and yet they jump up and down and say, well, you can't do this. It's a security. And then the commodities guy said, no, it's a commodity. And there's no laws about it, and they kind of had let the system run. But that's the key, is that the cryptos will be here when the old system kills itself. The cryptos won't kill the old system, but it'll be standing and ready to go when the old system dies of poor management, basically.
I do think I could make a pretty solid case with Gresham's that bad money drives out sound money.
That goes to the point of, is it the sound money that was really so great, or is it the bad money that really caused it?
So I think that kind of brings us to ultimate sound money, because, you know, I'd like to address your whole idea of mining on a cell phone. It sounds like a bad episode of Silicon Valley, right? Because you'll recall Hulicom, Pied Piper, they install the app onto the phone and it sets everyone's private areas on fire. One of the big problems there is that it's so energy intensive. You could have a mineable currency and you have your own specialized algorithm resistant to SHA-256 ASIC mining. And there are some folks that have pulled that off, i.e. Monero. You're going to need some really sharp core developers. And I would just suggest a direction. You need a rock-solid ASIC-resistant, SHA-256-resistant algorithm. How about prime factorization? I actually just penned a paper last night. You may have heard of the sieve of Eratosthenes. Well, it's just basically a way of factoring primes more quickly. It's been around since ancient times. Well, I've come up with a humble idea here called the sieve of Erdős. Okay, you might remember Paul Erdős, the great mathematician. He had a fascination with prime numbers. It's just a series of commands, and it essentially backs out extremely large prime numbers at somewhere around 70 to 80% faster using just elimination factors. But my idea is, let's incorporate that algorithm into a crypto of an iPhone, iPad, Android laptop, and then you don't burn the battery out.
I think we greatly underestimate the speed of innovation and technology, because every technology we invent makes it that much faster to get to the next step. I mean, it's taken 30 years to get from the introduction of the internet in 1990 till where we are today. And we think we can do anything, but I'll guarantee you within 5 or 10 years, it's going to look like what we're doing today was hysterical kids play. So it's the speed of technology growth. It's built on each other, and the speed of innovation, especially at a time we need it, which is coming up. It is just going to blow your mind what happens and what is available to us in the next 5 or 10 years, not to mention 30 years. I mean, if you can dream it up, at some point we'll have replicators that we punch in what we want for it to spit out, be it food or a tool or whatever, and it'll just kick it out from molecules being put together. That is our future at some point. Right now we have 3D printers that we think is really cool technology, but it's child's play compared to what it's going to look like in 20 or 30 years. Whatever we're doing today, you got to think it's going to be exponentially faster, exponentially more easy to use, and the innovation will even grow from there.
I would have dismissed everything as woo-woo, okay, a few years ago, until I worked on a project with Assurant Insurance on an interesting little IoT project. I didn't even know what the Internet of Things was. You know, it's the Internet of Things, and frankly, it's soon it'll be the Internet of Molecular Machines. It won't be long before, obviously, the fridge is communicating with the printer, which is communicating with your wristwatch and your iPhone and your Alexas around the house. We will have AI super intelligence. For instance, IBM's DeepMind turned everything upside down, but their second generation of DeepMind doesn't need to be trained. It actually beats the previous DeepMind that you had to run 100 to 200 billion simulations to become smarter than a human. Well, now their second generation doesn't even need to be trained. Let's say, for instance, in my favorite, one of my favorite fields is calculus. And it takes maybe 10 years to really get up there, 20 years to be a professor. These machines are teaching themselves in a couple of hours. It used to be years, now it's a couple of hours. And soon it'll be seconds, and then now they're having offspring.
The AI is going to take over the planet and decrypt the blockchain and all that. My counter to that is you're assuming that any AI that's invented and kind of runs itself is going to be evil. And I would counter that and say, well, why not develop a benevolent AI?
You've really created just the next series of person of interest. You might recall the award-winning TV show. You had the computer guy working in the basement in New York, and they're essentially looking out for people who are, you know, in harm's way, and the computer works along with them. And then you have the ex-CIA agent sort of on the street making sure everything works out, and Root comes in, and it gets all exciting, and there's a lot of drama. And then, of course, it ultimately, I think the show may have ended with the idea that there was a rogue AI, which now was stronger and smarter and fighting it out and everything. So I think you make some great points. We say we like to step outside the box. So you keep going with the probability chain, right? The decision tree. And you extrapolate. So it's not going to be like, let's see, like you pull the plug, because it's already thought that through and it's cloned 3 million copies and hidden it deep in the dark web, or sent it out to bounce off the moon, which then will bounce all around the moons of, let's say, Europa and Saturn and Jupiter. And then they will bounce back, okay, with the code to the Earth when enough time has elapsed. So once you cross that threshold, okay, the singularity, which I don't think is 2030, like Kurzweil is saying, I think it's already happened. We can't even imagine how smart it's going to be. So I believe it will not be a RoboCop Arnold type of meltdown. I actually am more positive. I think that the AI will actually do its very best to steer and direct humans in a more peaceful manner. For instance, we will become vegetarian. It'll show us the way humanitarian animals will be treated, and maybe even other disenfranchised populations.
I would say that the capabilities of AI are limited to running programs. That's what computers do. They run programs. They can run infinite programs. They can do immediate calculations of the hardest things in the world, but they will never have a soul. They will never have a spirit. They will never have that thing that makes us human. So we will always have an advantage to any type of AI that is created, in that we are more than the calculations that go on in our head. And I think that is something that, it's a different level of thinking, but is something that a computer can never achieve, because computers run programs.
There are an awful lot of bright minds that agree with Bixware. Kurt Gödel, you might be familiar with incompleteness theorem, and he also proved time travel was possible using Einstein's theory. He was a contemporary and good close friend at Princeton of Albert Einstein, and he concurs completely with your thoughts. He called it the divine spark. No matter what Alan Turing and his cadre, going all the way back to Leibniz, and investigate where did the computer come from, it essentially started with the cloth-making industry, because those punch cards that they used to develop weaving systems, I think the basis of the first computer.
Farther back to the abacus.
Gottfried Leibniz, who is another hero of mine, contemporary of Isaac Newton. Think of him as the Beethoven to Mozart, you know, super hardworking Beethoven versus child prodigy Mozart. He took it back to the I Ching, which, as you know, is an 8x8 64-bit. This is the real machine code. He derived his whole digital framework, which then he presented to the Royal Academy. So you could take this way back to the early times of the Qin Dynasty as the foundations of computer science. But you've been a big believer, as have we, in silver, seeing some big things happen in the oil market as black gold is being traded freely now in Asia with the yuan. This is some pretty big developments there. So commodities are catching a bid lately.
I would argue that no, commodities are still under the control of the computers and derivatives that are triggered out of the U.S. Treasury and the Fed, New York. Steve Mnuchin, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, was the head of IT for Goldman Sachs. He was the head of computer rigging for Goldman Sachs. So, no, there's not a free market in any commodity, much less anything traded on any exchange. But there are things exciting going on in silver. The Commitment of Traders report, as chased down by Ted Butler, has never been so bullish. And it's really exciting to see what the potential there is for silver to finally break free, at least partially, from the manipulation, the price manipulation. JP Morgan has never been so long in physical. Ted Butler's research says, hey, they've got eagles, they've got over 750 million ounces of physical silver in their possession right now. And that is a stunning number, considering the Hunt brothers had about 100 million.
I mean, this is a new trend. Putin, I'm sure you saw that he recently started to stockpile several tons of silver in 70-ounce bars. I mean, when was the last time you read of any key central bank from the PBOC, the Bank of Japan, the BOJ, BOE, or the Fed actually announcing and showing images online of pallets full of 70-pound AG bars? And it's ironic because there's some speculation in the crypto sphere, here I go again, that eventually the central banks will capitulate and have to build up their own meager stockpiles of Bitcoin. But you talked a little bit about one of the most favorable Commitment of Traders reports, and I have to agree with you. The COT numbers look fantastic. It looks like really all the stars are aligned there. And we also see that the institutions, the deep pockets, the hedge funds, the specs, and the commercials are starting to recognize we might be on the wrong side of this market. What's going on here, Bix?
Yeah, that's the thing. How do they get out of it? They swap it between each other, is what they've done in the past. So it doesn't actually have to go on the exchange. We've seen it before with JP Morgan swapping with Citibank in the past. And it's all proven out in the statistics at the OCC, the Office of Comptroller of Currency. And they show the positions of gold. Well, they used to keep gold separate, but now they link that in with foreign exchange. But they definitely show the positions of other precious metals, which is mainly silver. And yeah, they can do behind the back deals, and they have been doing that for years and years and years. The question is, how long do we want to allow them to do it? And as you said, Russia knows what's going on in the rigging of the metals. Ultimately, it's who has the physical. China's been hoarding physical metal since Jim Sinclair has been saying they're hoarding physical gold in the late 90s. So there's just huge stockpiles around the world. Governments don't want this to end as long as they can game the system a little more, just to have that little more advantage over when the system stops and you can no longer get physical silver from somewhere like the COMEX or the LBMA. That's when these people need their hoards of silver so that they can produce things on an industrial level. If the U.S. is hoarding silver, which I believe they are, they're hoarding it on the mine level, not issuing mining permits for a lot of these mining companies and hiding stuff in military bases and, you know, strategic wildlife preserves like Dianne Feinstein loves to do. But ultimately, at the end of the day, unbacked fiat system crashes and ends. It'll be who's got the stuff, who's got the goods, who's got the metal. Then we're going to have to say, okay, what's it worth? What's it worth in fiat terms? What's it worth in crypto terms? What in the world is going on here? And I think we're coming close to that point. At least the banks are positioning themselves to that point.
The Gold Council, according to their figures, as far as true, pure investment supply, stockpiles, there's actually twice as much gold above ground available. Keep in mind, well, I mean, if everybody pulled out their silver drawer, dug through their safes and whatnot, home safes and their safety deposit boxes, I mean, there would be 10 or 20 times more silver, but currently available. And to me, that sounds like we have a pretty frightening bottleneck where an enormous amount of demand, or dollars, if you will, fiat, or maybe now crypto, could suddenly emerge and raise havoc on the markets. Do you see one of those force majeure-like moments, a squeeze that might erupt?
I used to believe it was possible, but obviously the comics changed the rules so that, you know, they can settle in cash. So it won't be a force majeure on the comics. But on the flip side, I'm probably the wrong guy for you to talk about the scarcity of gold, because I believe there's massive amounts of gold that the governments are hiding. Silver, on the other hand, I think it's the exact opposite. I do think we will be running out of silver, given that they trade 300 billion ounces of electronic silver every year on the COMEX and the LBMA combined. I think that we are in for a huge problem in physical silver once the COMEX and LBMA are shut down, basically. Then there comes the problem. There is no other physical exchange on planet Earth for silver other than your local coin shop. And where would they look to for price? So there's huge problems in gold and silver. I think silver will do extremely well, so much better than gold, especially given the ratio right now. But I do think there's massive amounts of gold that are hidden, dealt with on a central banking level, clearly at the COMEX and the LBMA, especially the LBMA, which claims to be physical gold. They don't have the gold. There are so many tons out there that you're not allowed to know about. I believe that was the reason for the invention of the Federal Reserve in the very first place, is to control the system, control the amount of gold available and how much you tell the public about. And I think that's what, when you get into the official statistics, I think they're all complete lies.
Let's talk about maybe the numbers that people can easily wrap their minds around and digest right here. A, we're looking at about 80 to 1, the gold to silver ratio. 80 ounces of silver for one gold coin. History is cyclical. And in Roman times, it seems to me like, you know, that means one gold coin could buy a general's annual salary, because they were paid in silver. Even some of the higher folks at that time, gold was reserved for kings. Even the most humble middle class family could procure, you know, one bag of junk silver, toss it in a fireproof safe and forget about it. And if the stuff hits the fan, at least you've got something to fall back on.
I think the ratio is interesting because everybody talks about the historical ratio of gold to silver being either anywhere from 10 to 20 to 1. And that wasn't just some made up thing by government or the people. That was the amount available in circulation or the amount they had discovered in the ground. It was always based on some real metric. Today, the amount of reserves there are in gold and silver is ridiculously low. And the amount of above ground is the 5 billion ounces of physical silver total. And there's 5 billion ounces of physical gold, maybe 6 of each. But that's a 1-to-1 ratio. For the price, because of the COMEX and LBMA ratio issues and the amount of derivatives traded, the price ratio now being 70 to 80 to 1 is so outrageous. CFTC runs cover for this manipulation, but ultimately it has to snap back. And when it does, most likely people will say, okay, how much is above ground, 1-to-1 ratio, and how much do we need gold versus how much do we need silver to live? Without silver, our life changes. Without gold, it doesn't change all that much. Without silver, you got no cell phone, you got no flat screen TV, you got no solar panel.
Without silver, we lose the backbone for the very crypto revolution we're all hoping will continue here.
If you look at how much silver is used in the mining rigs, it's just tiny, tiny, tiny bits of silver used in each computer.
Ah, but it's inelastic, the very inelastic nature of it. So imagine, for instance, we talked about this in the last show. According to Forbes' latest numbers, you've got 1,425 billionaires. One of them, with just a humble modicum, could corner or come close to cornering the physical, not the paper, but the physical silver market. It's an inelastic demand. So when things do get dislocated and just a few Warren Buffett types get interested in the market, as he did, remember, in the late 90s, and cornered the market and doubled it in price in a just brief period of time, things could take off.
Absolutely. And you look at, I mean, I would say J.P. Morgan has already cornered the market for physical silver. Now, granted, they did another thing of shorting the price on the COMEX and getting others to short with them so that the price didn't go up. But they absolutely know the difference between a physical ounce of silver and a physical or a non-physical electronic position on the COMEX or the LBMA. So I think absolutely at some point we will see some kind of distortion in the COMEX and the LBMA. It might be that people just say, we're not going to look at your prices anymore because You're saying the price of silver is $16.50, and yet I can't buy silver for less than $300 an ounce.
Why don't you tell people more about what they can find out at Road to Ruta?
Lately, I've been doing a lot of work at the Road to Ruta YouTube channel and put out almost video a day talking about cryptos, talking about gold and silver, talking about our government. So check me out there, or you can go to roadtoruta.com and find any of the 3,000 articles I have posted there that I've written over the years. Come check it out.
All right, Biggs, thanks for being a good sport and giving us all this time today. Let's talk again in 2018.
Sounds good.